good evening, everyone. This is Luke Cavalli, and you're listening to The Divided Kingdom. Well, here we are, next to the last day for me, as I record this of the year. You'll be hearing this when it's the new year, 2026. Hard to believe another year is going by. Makes me feel old, but that's because I am old. Well, all right, now, you're listening to a program of news and Christian emphasis, really begun by my late wife, Elizabeth, and carried on by me. She's been gone now for 10 months, and I really miss her. Christmas time just didn't seem quite the same, but I had good friends invite me over to Christmas Day, so that was a big advantage and took some of the sting out of not having Elizabeth with me. So I'm dedicating these programs to her. You can hear us Thursday evenings on WWCR.com. And you can also hear us on their shortwave Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. on a frequency, shortwave frequency of 4.840 megahertz. And that program repeats Saturday mornings. And I believe the frequency is 7.490. You can check that out by going to my website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And I'll repeat that later, so you might want to grab a pencil, a pen, and paper. Take down a few contact pieces of information. But let's begin today with an article that appeared in the Washington Times by Matt Delaney. It appeared Sunday, this past Sunday, December 28th, 2025. It's entitled, Tip of a Very Large Iceberg. FBI steps up probe of Minnesota fraud after indictments, convictions. The FBI said Sunday that the agency is probing for additional fraud schemes in Minnesota after a series of criminal convictions, charges, and media reports unveiled widespread abuse of federal and state welfare programs. And I should interject, this is Lou speaking, things like this might normally be only for the states to consider, but the fact that a lot of this involves interstate commerce brings in the federal prosecutors and the FBI. So continuing with the article, FBI Director Kash Patel said investigative teams are targeting fraudsters who are exploiting federal aid programs meant for those in need. He referenced the FBI's role in arresting those involved with the Feeding Our Future fraud ring, a nonprofit that bilked at least $250 million from the federal government by claiming to serve meals to underprivileged children. The nonprofit took advantage of relaxed vetting standards during the pandemic by providing a fake list of the number of meals it distributed and phony attendance rosters of thousands of children who supposedly received the food. Prosecutors said the fraudsters would use the millions of ill-gotten federal dollars to buy properties overseas and splurge on personal luxuries. And here's a quote from Kash Patel. The FBI believes that this is just the tip of a very large iceberg, Mr. Patel wrote on X. He also said, we will continue to follow the money and protect children. And this investigation very much remains ongoing. The FBI's investigation netted 78 indictments and 57 convictions in connection to the scheme, which was largely perpetrated by members of Minnesota's Somali community. Mr. Patel's social media post appears to be in response to a viral expose by conservative YouTube personality Nick Shirley, in which he approaches several Somali-run daycare centers in the Minneapolis area that were seemingly empty. Mr. Shirley's video report showed him approaching multiple daycare centers to see whether he could enroll his fictitious child at the facility. He either received no response when he knocked on the door or was denied entry by the employees, some of whom told him off, or shut the door in his face. Mr. Shirley said some of the facilities were receiving millions of dollars in state funds to run daycare centers that were supposed to be supervising dozens of children. Federal prosecutors further linked many Minnesota-based Somalians to separate cons of the state's social safety net meant to help autistic children and provide housing assistance. The U.S. Attorney's Office for Minnesota in September accused Asher Farhan, F-A-R-H-A-N, Hassan, H-A-S-S-A-N, of defrauding the state of at least $14 million by having Somali parents register their children for the program after getting a fake autism diagnosis. Ms. Hassan paid the parents in kickbacks, ranging from $300 to $1,500 per month per so-called autistic child, according to prosecutors. That same month, federal prosecutors charged several people with defrauding Minnesota's Housing Stabilization Service program. The program, which is intended to help find and maintain housing for disabled people and drug addicts, instead helped the defendants buy BMWs and make real estate investments in Kenya, court records said. The U.S. Attorney's Office said at least six people accused of perpetrating the housing fraud are of Somali descent. A November report by City Journal said many of the Somalis connected to the fraud ring sent money back to Somalia in the form of remittances. Those remittances, according to the report, wound up in the hands of the Islamist terror group Al-Shabaab, which has links to Al-Qaeda. So that's where some of your money is going. Oh, and my money too. This is because it's Lou speaking now. And I don't think that the fraud is limited to one state, Minnesota, but it seems to be the one that got caught. And so for the time being, at least, most of the emphasis is on the fraud in that state. And, of course, Tim Walz, wasn't he the man running for vice president? Oh, yes, he was, wasn't he? So that adds a little bit more interest to the fact that he is the one being blamed for either ignoring or not doing anything about this fraud in his state, in which he's the governor. Well, here's one. And I should repeat the fact of where I got that first one from. The first one was from the Washington Times by Mike Delaney, Sunday, December 28th. And if you want to look it up, just look for the words tip of a very large iceberg. Those were Cash Patel's words. Now, with a little more background information, a little more information in general about it, here's from Fox News. Tim Walz pushes back on Minnesota fraud allegations following viral daycare video. And the subtitle says independent journalist Nick Shirley documented visits to facilities that allegedly received millions in state funding. As I said, this is from Fox News. The author is Sophia Compton, also December 28th, 2025. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz's office is pushing back against fraud allegations after a viral video showed visits to multiple child care centers in the state, including one that allegedly received millions of dollars in state funding despite appearing largely inactive. Responding to questions about the allegations and the video posted by independent journalist Nick Shirley, a spokesperson for the governor told Fox News that Walz has spent years working to crack down on fraud and has taken steps to strengthen oversight of state programs, including initiating investigations into several facilities. And here's a quote by that spokesperson for the governor. Quote, the governor has worked for years to crack down on fraud and asked the state legislature for more authority to take aggressive action, the spokesperson said. And that person went on. He has strengthened oversight, including launching investigations into these special facilities, one of which was already closed, unquote. Well, this is Lou speaking now. I didn't know you had to get special permission from the legislature to go after fraud. I thought fraud was illegal and could be prosecuted by the ordinary powers that be. Well, gosh, that's a new one to me. Well, let's go back to the article. The spokesperson added that Waltz has, quote, hired an outside firm to audit payments to high-risk programs, shut down the Housing Stabilization Services program entirely, announced a new statewide program integrity director, and supported criminal prosecutions, unquote. And I think what most people would say, and Lou, this is Lou interjecting, my two cents worth, I would think that that would have been done a long time ago. Because apparently there has been time enough for the federal people to obtain convictions on some of these frauds. So why didn't Waltz jump in as soon as he heard about that? Well, I don't know. But going on with the article, the response follows the release of that 22-minute video by Shirley, posted Friday on X and YouTube, documenting visits to several daycare centers in the Blue State, including a location on Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis. In the video, Shirley and another man are seen at what appears to be a largely inactive child care facility. The building also displays a misspelled sign, reading Quality Learning Center. Except, and I'm interjecting now, instead of the word learning, it is leering, L-E-A-R-I-N-G, left out a letter. You would think that when they have a sign put up, they could at least get the spelling right. Well, that should tip us off that something is a little strange. But let me read that sentence again. The building also displays a misspelled sign reading Quality Learning Center, even though the center is reportedly supposed to account for 99 children and received roughly $4 million in state funds. Oh, I got to interrupt this again. Again, this is Lou speaking. 99 children, $4 million. Let me get my calculator. Let's see how much that is per child. So we got to have $4 million. Let me see now, that's 6 zeros, isn't it? 1,000 million, yes. Divided by 99, why, that comes out to be $40,404.04 per child. That's pretty expensive. That to me sounds like expensive child care, doesn't it? I bet you it does to you too, those of you listening. Well, back to the article. During a Sunday appearance on Fox News show, The Big Weekend Show, Shirley said the alleged fraud in Minnesota was, quote, so obvious that a kindergartner could figure out that there was fraud going on, unquote. Shirley also suggested other journalists may be reluctant to pursue similar reporting out of fear of being labeled Islamophobic or racist. But Shirley said, quote, fraud is fraud, and we work too hard simply just to be paying taxes and enabling fraud to happen, unquote. Now, the video has sparked widespread backlash, drawing criticism of Waltz throughout the weekend from several high-profile figures, including Vice President J.D. Vance, Senator Mike Lawler, Republican of New York, Donald Trump Jr., and Elon Musk. The White House on Sunday reposted an X post from Education Secretary Linda McMahon, who called the alleged fraud a, quote, breathtaking failure that has happened under the watch of Mr. Waltz. Meanwhile, FBI Director Cash Patel said the agency has surged additional personnel and investigative resources to Minnesota as part of an ongoing effort to, quote, dismantle large-scale fraud schemes exploiting federal programs, unquote. Did video went viral this week that meant the burgeoning scandal enveloping the Walz administration that notably included at least $1 billion lost to alleged social services fraud, largely tied to the Somali community in the Twin Cities. And that ends that article. Again, that was from Fox News. Sophia Compton was the author. December 28th was the date. And it said, Tim Walz pushes back on Minnesota fraud allegations, etc. Now, I should mention, it said in that last sentence, the video went viral this week amid the burgeoning scandal enveloping the Walz administration that notably included at least $1 billion lost to alleged social services, etc. Involving the Somali community in the Twin Cities, that'd be in St. Paul and Minneapolis. $1 billion, that's a lot of money. That's a one. You got to write that down sometime. I've said that before about big amounts. We toss these large amounts around as if they were just commonplace. But $1 billion, that's a one followed by, let me think now, thousands, millions, billions. It's going to have nine zeros after it. A one with nine zeros. When you write it down that way, it's more impressive. That's a lot of money. And this is one state in the union. Now, fraud has been around since the beginning of time. We all know that. My home state of Massachusetts is famous for fraud and corruption and gangland killings. When I was a kid, it seemed like every two or three weeks there was a gangland killing in the Boston suburbs. A lot of it in the northern suburbs, not too far from where I lived growing up. But this, when you start talking about billions, man, that is big money even by fraudulent standards. And just to play fair, I'm going to buy best contacts up in the grand state of Massachusetts that likes to call itself the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That sounds a little more impressive, I guess. Sent me a whole packet of wonderful clippings from Boston Herald, New York Post, and one of them is a somewhat comical, but on the other hand, not so comical, article by Holly Carr, who's a regular columnist for the Boston Herald, the more conservative of the Boston newspapers. It's entitled Taxpayers Stomped On in EBT Scam. I'm not living in the Boston area. This one's new to me. But if you live up in that direction, you probably heard a lot about this. And this appeared December 19th in the Boston Herald. Ex-Governor Deval Patrick always knew how to summarily dismiss any welfare scandal, no matter how bad. Quote, anecdotes, unquote. That's all a welfare ripoff was for small Deval, just an anecdote. Same as drunken driving, illegal aliens killing U.S. citizens. That is drunk driving, illegal aliens killing U.S. citizens. Mere anecdotes. So this is a column about what happened at a storefront on Blue Hill Avenue in Mattapan. But remember, it's only an anecdote. Or should I say, anecdotes. Brawl. In all, this is about 6,916,380 anecdotes, all of which have George Washington's portrait on them. That's how much food stamp money the feds say was taken out of this tiny little storefront. Jasula Variety Store. The feds call it JBS in their indictment of two newcomers to Western civilization. Antonio Bonheur, age 74, a naturalized U.S. citizen from Haiti, and his apparent protege, Saul Alisma, age 21, a, quote, lawful permanent resident, unquote. And his name is spelled A-L-I-S-M-E. So I apologize to him if I'm not doing justice to his name. They were both charged this week in the beginning of a long overdue crackdown on the billion-dollar illegal alien welfare industrial complex in the gateway cities, formerly working class communities, now overrun by the non-working classes from parts unknown. First, a brief overview of JBS, according to a 50-page affidavit by the feds. As an American who works for a living, you are probably familiar with a certain kind of supermarket. Think market basket, spacious, clean, lots of cash registers. Then there's the new Democrat type of supermarket in the gateway cities, like JBS on Blue Hill Avenue. Here are some of the features in this quaint Haitian bodega, according to the feds. No freezers, no refrigerated section, no meats, no seafood, no eggs, no dairy products, no shopping carts or hand baskets. A single cash register with no barcode readers. Yeah, the place was thronged by locals, many of them brand new arrivals to civilization. Business was absolutely booming. Bonner opened his store in September 2021 as the Democrats began flooding the country with millions of shiftless criminal aliens. Bonner has seen his opportunities, and he took them. That first month, his store processed $872 in food stamps. In January 2023, when Maura Healey became governor, he still only grabbed $7,207. But then came the foreign freeloader flophouses, the Healy Hotels. He was off to the races. 3 years later, in August of last year, Bonner grabbed $540,870 in welfare payoffs. It was amazing, the throngs of customers coming into that little storefront, spending so much more on every transaction than at larger supermarkets. For instance, the feds say less than 2% of all food stamp transactions are over $95. Yet at JBS, approximately 90% of the quote-unquote purchases were for more than $95, more than 70% for more than $150. The feds put up a camera outside the Third World Reparations Redemption Center to see what the illegal aliens, or the patrons, were getting for their pesos. Quote, no customers, unquote, the G-Man wrote, emerged from that storefront. This is all in quotes. No customers emerged from that storefront carrying groceries or bags consistent with these large dollar value transactions, unquote. This is not to say that no products were for sale. Liquor, for instance. But not bonded distilled spirits. No, they were selling bootleg rum from the Third World bleep holes. All the criminal grifters had fled in 2021 in search of a lifelong vacation in America. And JBS also had something called Mana Packs, which are supposed to ever be sold in the United States. They are manufactured by a charitable group called Feed My Starving Children, go to as charity to failed countries like Haiti, the home country of the defendants here. The only way Mana Packs could have been for sale in JBS, the feds say, is if they were illegally, I'll make that quote, illicitly obtained, unquote. To repeat, as Deval Patrick told us so often, these are just anecdotes. There have always been places like this, especially in urban areas. Back before the lottery, in the cities, there would be similar storefronts with a few dusty cans of tomato sauce in the fly-specked front window, along with maybe a few other canned products. Of course, no customers went to those places to shop. They went there to play the daily number. It were drops. In the evening, Jerry Angelo's runners would come around and pick up the slips. But there were a lot of differences between those long-ago drops and JBS. For one thing, there was no taxpayer subsidies of the numbers game. Everyone at Sal's Corner Store was using their own money, not welfare. Approximately 100% of those playing the number had jobs, compared to approximately 0% of the JVS patrons. Another difference. Sal's clientele had immigrated to America because they heard there was work. The freeloaders at JVS arrived here for just the opposite reason. They heard there was no work here, ever. One more difference. Whatever his other character shortcomings, Jerry Angiulo was never on welfare. Antonio Bonner, Haitian immigrant, got himself an EBT card, several million dollars into the scam. And why not? As the feds noted, Governor Mara Healey's Department of Transition Assistance, quote, apparently did not compare the income Bonner actually received, unquote, with what he claimed he was making, which was nothing. And he cashed his own food stamps out of his own store as the alleged theft topped $500,000 a month. Why did the illegal aliens and the welfare go to JVS? Because Bonner gave his fellow foreign freeloaders a better cut than the competition. The Cholos doing business in the supermarket parking lots. Quote, according to U.S. Attorney Leah Foley, who told Howard Carr this week, quote, he would charge you $120 off the card, and you would get back $100. That's not bad. If you're a junkie or a gangbanger looking to buy a new machete to use for your fiancé, chances are you won't do much better than 50 cents on a dollar. Of course, it is free money. But then for illegal aliens, that's the only kind there is. We started with a cliche about welfare from a Democrat, Duval Patrick. Let's close with one from a Republican, George W. Bush. He used to say the illegals are only here to work the jobs Americans don't want to work anymore. On Blue Hill Avenue in Mattapan, the illegals are only here to steal the welfare Americans don't want to steal anymore. And I should mention this is by Howie Carr, regular columnist for the Boston Herald. And it says you can order Howie's new book, Mass Corruption, Volume 1, The Cops. You get that at Amazon.com or at HowieCarrShow.com/store. So remember, Howie, H-O-W-I-E, Carr, C-A-R-R. And that appeared in the Boston Herald December 19th. The title was Taxpayers Stomped On in EBT Scam. All right. That's enough corruption for the moment. Let's see what else we have. And then there's money of the more legal kind, but also controversial. This is from Fox News, Fox Business to be exact. I don't seem to have the date, but I think it was right around perhaps 2 to 3 days ago. It might have been Sunday, the 28th of December. At any rate, Fox News, the title, Tech Billionaires Threaten to Flee California Over Proposed 5% Wealth Tax. And the subtitle, A Proposed Ballot Measure Threatens to Raise Taxes on the State's Wealthiest Residents. This is by Amanda Macias, I think you pronounce it, M-A-C-I-A-S, at Fox Business. Now, I should mention, I know several people personally that have gotten out of California while the getting was good. One person who has been a contributor to this show for many, many years, in fact, decided the time had come. And not just money. Also, the living conditions had deteriorated so much. The dirt, grimy streets, crime, all of those things convinced her to get out of there while the getting was good. But here it's the very wealthy that are trying to decide should they stay or go. So let's see what it says. Silicon Valley's wealthiest residents are once again threatening to leave California, this time over a proposed state wealth tax the tech founders warn could fundamentally reshape where innovation and capital call home. The proposal, backed by the Service Employees International Union, United Healthcare Workers West, would impose a one-time 5% tax on the assets of California residents worth more than $1 billion. And this is Lou speaking now. Notice the way this reads. It says it's not a tax on income. It's a tax on assets. That means if you own a building, you got to pay 5% of the value of that building as a tax. That could go into big money. And companies are looking at big taxes. Now, a state like California can never get enough tax money. No matter how much they take in, it's not enough. And I guess most states are like that. But my home state of Maryland here, my present home state, I don't see this kind of thing being proposed. But leave it to California. So, continuing with the article, supporters say the revenue could help offset federal funding cuts for health care. Even as the measure remains under consideration for the November statewide ballot, some of Silicon Valley's most prominent figures are warning it could trigger an exodus of founders and capital. Palmer Luckey, co-founder of defense tech startup Anduril, said the tax would force, quote, founders like me to sell huge chunks of our companies, unquote, to pay for what he described as, quote, fraud, waste, and political favors for the organizations pushing this ballot initiative. Luckey went on to write on X, I made my money from my first company, paid hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes on it, used the remainder to start a second company that employs 6,000 people. And now me and my co-founders have to somehow come up with billions of dollars in cash. Unquote. Luckey's comments come as billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel and Google co-founder Larry Page weigh whether to cut ties with the Golden State over the proposed ballot measure, according to a New York Times report. And it says, and as a caption on the photograph, Peter Thiel, co-founder and chairman of Palantir, is worth approximately $27.5 billion and could owe more than $1.2 billion if the measure becomes law in California. That's the caption on the photograph that you can see if you go to the website. Again, this is Fox News. I'll give the full information in just a minute. Now, I would say, and this is Liz speaking again, as an educated layman, most companies do not have that much in cash available, $1.2 billion. A lot of that money is tied up in property, plant, and equipment, PPE, as they say in accounting. Which means it's not readily available unless you sell some of your property or your plant, your buildings and such, or your equipment. So that's one of the big objections to this whole idea. You can't just come up with the money as if it's sitting in a bank somewhere. That money is tied up, and you have to do some serious damage to your company to get at the cash to pay the taxes. Going back to the article, if the measure qualifies for the November ballot and is approved by voters, it would apply retroactively to anyone who lived in California as of January 1st, 2026. But you see what they're trying to do is they're trying to attract the people so they can't just leave sometime in the year 2026 to go to another state and avoid the tax. Now, I don't know about the legalities of that, but that would hold up in courts and not. Not being a lawyer. And back to the article. In practical terms, a resident with $20 billion in assets on that date would owe One-time tax of $1 billion payable over 5 years. But, you know, investor Bill Ackman echoed those concerns, calling California, quote, on a path to self-destruction, unquote, if the measure moves forward. And Bill Ackman, the Pershing Square chief, wrote on X, quote, Hollywood is already toast, and now the most productive entrepreneurs will leave, taking their tax revenues and job creation elsewhere. Now, it also shows a picture of Governor Gavin Newsom. And it continues, earlier this month, California Governor Gavin Newsom said he opposed the proposed billionaire tax while cautioning against panic over the measure. And this is a quote from him. It's not something to be panicked about, but it's part of the broader concern and narrative that's developed in this country of the haves and have-nots. Not just income inequality, but wealth inequality, Newsom told an audience at the New York Times Deal Book Conference. Well, again, this is Luke speaking. It's hard from that quote to decide, is he for it or against it? And knowing Gavin Newsom, he might be for it today and against it tomorrow, or vice versa. Again, this came from Fox News, Fox Business to be particular, by Amanda Macias, M-A-C-I-A-S, on an uncertain date, but probably within 3 days of today. Today is, as I'm recording this, is December 30th, so probably either the 28th or the 29th of December. And the title was Tech Billionaires Threaten to Flee California Over Proposed 5% Wealth Tax. All right, what else do we have here? All right, we've talked a lot about money, so let's get away from the money talk to something different. This also came from the Washington Times on December 28th. Representative Turner defends strikes against Islamic State in Nigeria as Democrats question tactics. And I will say I did a little research on the internet just a few minutes ago, and you find a lot of people, especially Democrats, trying to say, oh, the Muslims weren't targeting Christians. It's not a genocide in Nigeria. But a lot of that was unconvincing. And one of the common things that they'll say is, oh, it's more complicated than that. A lot of other things going on. There are a lot of other assaults by these Islamists. And it happens in the border area between the Christian South and the Islamic North of Nigeria. However, a lot of that, to me, didn't ring true. But I'll admit, I'm not there. I don't know all the ins and outs. But let me read what this says. This is by Vaughn Cocaine and Ben Wolfgang, Washington Times, Sunday, December 28th. Representative Mike Turner on Sunday defended the Trump administration's Christmas strikes against Islamic State targets in Nigeria, arguing that they were consistent with U.S. foreign policy and unnecessary to combat global extremism. In an interview with reporter Jonathan Carl on ABC's This Week, Mr. Turner, Ohio Republican, said strikes like the ones carried out last week on targets in Nigeria would continue as long as ISIS and groups like them persist. Said Mr. Turner, quote, it's been, you know, around the world, Iraq, Syria. You're seeing it now in Nigeria. And Mr. Turner, that was a quote from Mr. Turner, who also serves in the House Armed Services Committee. He went on, we're, of course, seeing that ISIS around the world has not been defeated, but will continue to be a target, and something that, with our allies, we're going to have to continue to respond to, or they're going to continue to be a threat, unquote. U.S. forces struck numerous Islamic State targets in northwestern Nigeria on Thursday, and what Mr. Trump said was retaliation for the terror group's years of attacks on Christian civilians. Now, interject, Luke speaking, that much appears to be true. There have been recent reports of Christian girls kidnapped from schools in Nigeria on at least two occasions, and churches burned, Christians killed. So I don't think this is all just a trumped-up thing. Going on with the article, U.S. African Command said the attacks were carried out in coordination with the Nigerian government, which has struggled to contain ISIS and its various affiliates that are gaining strength in Nigeria. Mr. Turner's comments are in line with other GOP lawmakers who took to social media to praise the White House for Christmas strikes. Representative Don Bacon, Nebraska Republican, who serves on the House Armed Services Committee, said the move, quote, saves innocent lives, unquote. But Democrats, like Michigan Representative Debbie Dingell, have questioned the legality of the attacks, insisting that only Congress has the authority to escalate conflict abroad. Democratic lawmakers are skeptical of the White House's strategy in Nigeria and suggested the focus on Christians is unproductive and possibly dangerous. Representative Adam Smith, Washington Democrat, who is the ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee, called the strikes, quote, unnecessary escalatory, unquote, which could push the U.S. into a, quote, global religious war, unquote. The Nigerian government has denied that there is ongoing persecution of Christian civilians. The Trump administration in recent weeks has ramped up assaults on the Islamic State around the world, including in Syria, where American forces hit more than 70 ISIS targets on December 20th after a terrorist gunman killed two U.S. soldiers and a civilian interpreter earlier this month. Analysts have warned that the group could be mounting a resurgence both as an organized terrorist faction and as an inspiration to extremists around the world. The two men who allegedly carried out a deadly anti-Semitic attack at Australia's Bondi Beach earlier this month, for example, were inspired by ISIS, Australian authorities said. Mr. Trump offered a little detail on the Nigerian operation in a Christmas evening Truth Social post, but warned that the U.S. would not allow what some have characterized as a genocide of Christians to continue. These are Mr. Trump's words. I have previously warned these terrorists that if they did not stop the slaughtering of Christians, there would be hell to pay. And tonight, there was, he wrote. U.S. Africa Command confirmed that it struck ISIS targets in Nigeria's Sokoto State region, near the nation's northwestern border with Niger. Quote, U.S. Africa Command is working with Nigerian and regional partners to increase counterterrorism cooperation efforts related to ongoing violence and threats against innocent lives, said General Dagmann Anderson, the head of U.S. Africa Command, in a statement. He went on, our goal is to protect Americans and to disrupt violent extremist organizations wherever they are, unquote. Nigeria is the latest African nation in which Mr. Trump has ordered new military operations or ramped up existing campaigns. The U.S. this year has carried out more than 100 strikes against terror targets in Somalia, including against ISIS. In addition to its recent military operations against the group that is ISIS in Syria, the Trump administration earlier this year added Nigeria to a U.S. watch list as a, quote, country of particular concern, unquote, citing statistics showing more Christians being killed there, 3,100 last year, than anywhere else in the world. The 3,100 figure represents nearly 70% of Christians killed worldwide, according to the international watchdog group Open Doors. All right. That concludes the article. It's from the Washington Times. The title was Representative Turner Defends Strikes Against Islamic State in Nigeria as Democrats Question Tactics. That was December 28th, 2025. Well, just to make a comment or two, the world took no action against Nazi Germany when the Jews were being slaughtered. And ever since, many historians and others of all persuasions, leftists, writers, have criticized the fact that when it would have been possible to take some action against the Nazis in the middle 1930s, when they had already started the massive persecution of Jews, nothing was done of any significance. So now the Democrats are saying, well, you shouldn't be doing this, in spite of the fact that many are saying this is a genocide of Christians in that part of Nigeria. So I don't know. It may be years before we can judge whether this was a good action or a bad action. But I would say that from my limited perspective, I would support it, what the president has done. All right, now we have from Fox News a quote from Erica Kirk. We are not afraid. Erica Kirk vows TPUSA will continue campus debates nationwide. In the subtitle, We Are Not Afraid, Erica Kirk tells Shannon Bream, TPUSA will return to campus debates. Let me leave off just a minute while we still have some time left to mention that our website, now I guess I'll have to say my website, is DividedKingdomRadio.com. You can find the various ways you can listen to our program listed there. Of course, the most direct way is just by short wave, Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. This pre-recorded program is broadcast then on shortwave, 4.840 megahertz, and on the website for Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR.com. You can also hear it Saturday morning, a rebroadcast of the same program. If you miss it Thursday night, you can hear it Saturday morning on 7.490 megahertz at 8 a.m. And you can always listen to it on the website if you go to the listening archives and just pick the program for the date you want. I do have to bring the past shows up to date on the menu so that you can see what some of the topics were for some of those programs. And I'll hope to do that over the next few days. Get it to our web mistress and Angel, and she can put those up. If you'd like to write to me, I'd love to hear from you. We can always use some contributions. And also have a few more books left about COVID. I had some friends tested positive for COVID just the other day, a few days ago. So it hasn't disappeared. And this little book is I shouldn't call it little. It's about the size of an average paperback book. It's attractive. It has some color pictures. And it's free. We'd appreciate it if you could send us a little cash to help pay for the postage. We don't need much. Usually $5 is sufficient. But the number is limited. We're running short. I'd say we might have as many as 15 left, and that's it. Probably won't have enough money to order more copies. So if you want it, just write to me, Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y. The address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip is 21609. That's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip is 21609. All you have to do is just give us your address and just say, please send me a copy of your book, and I'll get it right in the mail, hopefully the very next day. Okay, getting back to this article now about Erica Kirk. This again was from Fox News, December 28th. Erica Kirk, the widow of the late Turning Point USA, or TPUSA, founder Charlie Kirk, told Fox News' Shannon Bream on Fox News Sunday that the organization intends to resume its nationwide presence on college campuses. She said, quote, we are not afraid, unquote, adding that the TPUSA team will continue to host Prove Me Wrong-style debates as part of the campus outreach. Charlie Kirk, of course, was assassinated during an outdoor event September 10th at Utah Valley University. The gathering marked the first stop on TPUSA's planned America Comeback Tour. And at first, nothing appeared out of the ordinary. That's talking about the September 10th incident when they say nothing appeared out of the ordinary. The charismatic TPUSA founder rose to prominence with the signature political debates on college campuses. Moments before the fatal shot, he sat beneath a white tent emblazoned with the slogan, "Prove me wrong," fielding open mic questions from thousands in attendance. His death left behind a movement that reshaped conservative youth politics, one that his widow, Erica Kirk, told Shannon Green she intends to carry forward. Charlie Kirk began building that movement as a teenager. At 18, he dropped out of community college to co-found Turning Point USA, TPUSA for short. By his mid-20s, he became the youngest speaker at the Republican National Convention in 2016, and a household name in conservative circles. By age 31, he commanded a $95 million political empire, galvanized millions of followers online, and established a direct line to President Donald Trump. With backing from Republican donors like Foster Freeze, Kirk turned the scrappy campus operation into one of the fastest-growing conservative nonprofits in America. Today, it's a political juggernaut, its revenue accounted to tax filings soaring from just $2 million in 2015 to $85 million in 2024. That legacy, carried forward by his widow, comes as the organization sees a surge in campus chapter enrollments, signaling continued momentum among conservative students nationwide. That was from Fox News, December 28th. Just look for the words, "We are not afraid," in the title. Got a few more things sent to me by my listener in Massachusetts. I'll just read you a few of the headlines. You can get the details. Hopefully they're still available on the internet. Why, here's one from the New York Post, December 20th. Bill has some explaining to do. And the subtitle says, "Tubba Bubba." Clinton, that is a Bill, frolics with mystery girl in Epstein file dump. And it just says the Department of Justice released hundreds of thousands, but not all, of its files on sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, including a number of pictures of former President Bill Clinton sharing a hot tub and an airplane seat with women whose identities were concealed. It shows a picture on this page one article, but they blacked out the face of the girl. So you can see Bill, but you can't tell who the girl is. You can see that she's there. And it has a fairly lengthy article and some more pictures. That was from the Metro edition of the New York Post on Saturday, December 20th, 2025. What else do we have here? Here's another one. This was the Boston Herald, December 16th, 2025. Four charged with plotting New Year's Eve attacks in Southern California. Los Angeles. This is from the Associated Press. A federal authority said Monday that they foiled a plot to bomb multiple sites of two U.S. companies on New Year's Eve in Southern California after arresting members of an extremist, anti-capitalist, and anti-government group. And the group's name was, I believe, something to do with Turtle. Let me see if I can find that. Yeah, the Turtle Island Liberation Front. Because in the old days, all these communist groups were called the Liberation Fronts. So I guess they envisioned themselves as being heirs to the communist doctrine. And again, you can read more about that if you go to the Boston Herald, December 16th, 2025. Four charged with plotting New Year's Eve attacks. Why, New Year's Eve is tomorrow. as I record this. Now, of course, when you hear it, it'll be New Year's Day. Oh, what else do we have? We only got a short time left. Here's one from the New York Post, Metro Edition, December 18th. Campus protests, swastika graffiti, online demagogues have given cities anti-Semites a license to hate. And in the subheadline, it says, in the latest horror, man yelled, quote, I'm going to kill a Jew today, unquote, as he stabbed a Jewish man. Says Elias Rosner, 35, a member of the Lubavitch Hasidic community in Crown Heights, shows where he was stabbed by a man yelling about killing Jews, the latest anti-Semitic attack after city protests vilified Jews for years. And, of course, there's much more to that. That was in the New York Post, December 18th, 2025. Front page article. And what else do we have here? This is about the Brown University guy. This was New York Post, Saturday, December 20th. Dark side of an evil genius. Talking about the Brown University and MIT professor shooter. So he whined that the Ivy League school's food was lousy, and his classes were too easy. It surfaced Friday along with new details about his academic competition with the teacher he killed. Claudio Neves, or Neves Vicente Valente, 48-year-old Portuguese national, was miserable on Brown's leafy Rhode Island campus and had a laundry list of complaints. Well, if you want to read more about that, that would be New York Post, Saturday, December 20th, 2025, Dark Side of an Evil Genius. Well, hey, our time has run out once again. So much to cover. Can't get it all in, but I hope we covered some interesting things that hold your attention. Again, you can write to me, Lou Caraway, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 216-09. Love to hear from you. You send a little money, that's always good too. But just letters are always well. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week. Good night.